Dhanyavad Abhishek. Thank you, Abhishek. And dear listeners, Sai Ram from Prashantanilayam, the most happening place on the planet. Today is March 14th, 2013, and the festival of Shivaratri just went by, and I cannot help but reflect on this glorious celebration. The Sai Kulwant Hall in Prashantanilayam was overflowing with devotees as the congregational chants went on and the night-long bhajans continued. You could see so many lost in contemplation of the divine, as if at least for those few hours they seemed removed from this mundane world and experienced a joy that they cherished and relished. It only brought back to me what Bhagwan has mentioned in so many Shivratri discourses, that this is the night when the power of the mind is at the minimum. The 16 kalas of the moon has been reduced to just one in this night. And since there is an inexplicable and intrinsic connection between the mind and the moon on this night, it is easily possible to subdue and transcend the fickleness and the frailties of the mind. And that was so evident when we saw thousands in that state of peace and happiness, when you are sort of free from the mind and fixed on the spirit and experiencing that peace and joy that can never be explained in words. And like every year, the morning of Shivaratri had a beautiful opening, a soulful presentation of devotional hymns and songs by the students of Baba's University.
Tanaka jinaka 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 j
So that was a glimpse of the Shivratri morning. Even as the songs were sung that morning, it really took me back to those days when Baba used to arrive on Shivratri mornings, sometimes in a silken white robe, and as the boys sang these powerful hymns describing this mysterious form of Lord Shiva, Swami would just close his eyes and be still, listening intently to the prayers of these boys, completely immersed, receiving those soulful chants emerging from eager hearts. And when you looked at Bhagwan, one glance at him, and it would be such a cleansing and sanctifying feeling. You cannot help but think, Swami is so much like Shiva, so auspicious, so pure, so immaculate, so like an ascetic. We may not have seen Lord Shiva, but looking at Swami, you knew this is how it would be if Lord Shiva were to sit among us, were to talk with us, were to live among us, and receive our prayers and bless us. In fact, reflecting on these thoughts, beautiful insights emerged. And these beautiful messages that came to me, I really wanted to share with someone. So I called my colleague from the Sri Sathya Sai Central Trust, Hari Shankar. And when I shared all this with him, he too resonated with me. And so we thought it would be nice to share with all our listeners these reflections. And that is what we did on the Shivratri day. We offered this as a satsang on Sai Shiva. Even now you can download this from our website, radiosai.org. And after we played this, a few listeners wrote to us sharing how it helped them too. And so, encouraged with these responses, I requested Hari Shankar if he could continue this discussion, because the more we dwell on this, the more delightful it becomes. And most importantly, not only do we discover amazing parallels between the enigmatic form of Lord Shiva and the Satya Sai Avatar, but also we deduce such profound messages, powerful truths about Godhead, about the Eternal One, that we should never ever forget, that we should always reiterate to ourselves and ruminate upon for our own good. And so, dear listeners, Hari Shankar is here with me in the studios now to continue this discussion. But before we get started, as we begin this last leg of our Thursday live broadcast, first, let us offer our humble and prayerful salutations at the feet of that supreme intelligence, that epitome of all wisdom, all love, all grace, and all glory. Dear Lord, please bless us so that we strive earnestly to attain only that which is permanent and not be distracted or deluded by the effervescent and the transient. Bless us so that we aspire for only you and your love. With this prayer, let us move on and welcome dear listeners to Outside, Inside and Deep Inside. And today, it is the second episode of Satsang on Sai Shiva. And my partner, as I mentioned, today is my colleague Hari Shankar, an alumnus of Baba's University, who did his MBA here in Prashant Nilayam after his engineering in IIT Chennai, and currently he works in the Sri Sathya Sai Central Trust. Thank you, Hari, for being in the studios for this program.
Sai Ram Vishuk, thanks for calling me back.
Yeah, so let's continue that discussion. You know, last time you were here, you remember we started talking about how among all the gods in the Indian tradition, Lord Shiva is so different. In fact, you mentioned this, that he has no adornments, no embellishment, and he's so like an ascetic.
Yeah, among the pantheon of gods, he is very distinct, so to speak. The characterization of Lord Shiva is so very different. And not only, one more point is, not only does he have the garb of an ascetic, he stays in a cremation ground.
Yes.
His home is the cremation ground.
He is the epitome of renunciation.
Yes, and he roams during the night. And it is typically said that a yogi is a person who is awake when the world is asleep and is asleep when the world is awake.
Yes.
And so it is with Lord Shiva, who is the king of ascetics.
Yes, and that really reminds me of how Bhagwan also used to say that he doesn't actually sleep in the nights. His light would be always be on, and Swami would say that he would not keep the lights on in the drawing room, but in the bathroom, and he would take a chair and he would sit in the bathroom and he would read letters and he would be doing God knows what. But we definitely know that he was not sleeping, and the boys who had the chance to be with Bhagwan, in fact, they also used to narrate how Bhagwan actually did not know what is sleep.
Yes. In fact, I remember when I was very curious about this, like what used to happen in the night, because about 3-4 students used to sleep around Swami's bed. So I had the opportunity to ask one of them, and he was saying this, that Swami had given them very specific instructions: no matter what happens in the night, you don't wake up, don't open your eyes. And still the first few nights that he slept in Swami's room, even he could not contain his curiosity. And he used to observe that almost every 1 hour, Swami would get up, go to the bathroom, and in fact turn on the tap, the water would be running for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
And then Swami would come out, and almost the entire night, this would be repeated like several times. And he never knew really what Swami was doing inside. Like, it was a total mystery to him. But whatever it was, Swami wanted to see to it that the boys got a very good night's sleep.
Yes.
Whereas his work continued throughout the night.
In fact, Bhagwan mentioned it also: I don't want to keep the lights of the drawing room or the main room, because Swami did not have so many rooms, the main room on, because people will think that Swami has not slept and they would constantly be watching. And in those days, people used to look for that window and see if the light is on in Swami's room. That's why he used to always put it off, so that you felt, okay, Swami is retired, so let us also now retire. It's for our sake. Anyway, so we really got into this because you said that Shiva and Swami are so much alike in terms of how they are so detached to this world and how their needs are so minimum, so rudimentary. And you remember last time we also started talking about Lord Shiva's Nandi.
Yes.
And Sai Gita.
Yes.
In fact, you know, that reminded me of a very beautiful card that boys had made for Swami many years ago in 1991. It was the time when Bhagwan was in Vrindavan. Mm-hmm. And Swami was here for a couple of weeks, and boys were really enjoying being with Swami because Swami was regularly giving three sessions, as we know, those sessions inside Bhagwan's residence in Vrindavan. And the festival of Shivratri was around the corner, and came the shocking news that Swami is likely to go to Prashantinilayam.
Oh, that would have been so disappointing for the boys.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they had were having such good time with Bhagwan, and you never wanted that to end. And so the only option at that time that looked possible was to pray Swami that if boys also could accompany him. Because the festival of Shivratri always had large crowds, and the Vrindavan ashram, as it was told, cannot accommodate those crowds, and Swami had to go to Prashantinilayam.
Mm.
So the boys started their prayers and letters and prayers and songs and everything, started praying Swami if boys could go with him. And guess what? Swami did agree.
Oh, okay.
Yes. So the boys, and not only that, the most interesting thing is, Swami allowed the boys to follow his car. So the bus in which the boys were traveling was going behind Swami's car. And the icing on the cake was, Swami suddenly, during the trip, made a surprise visit to Mudanahalli. So the boys went with Bhagwan to Mudanahalli, and Swami stayed there for a couple of hours. So he had lunch with all those boys. He spoke to the teachers there, and the boys had lunch with Bhagwan. They were witness to this beautiful interaction that Swami had with all those dedicated teachers of Mudanahalli and the students. Swami was talking to them in Kannada and Telugu, and, you know, looking at that whole scene, they were so happy they were with Bhagwan and going with Bhagwan to Prashantinilayam. And then after this stopover, Swami said, now my car will go quickly. All of you, take your time and come slowly in the bus. And of course they came to Prashantinilayam, and you know, Shivrati, they are in Prashantinilayam, they cannot believe this, and they want to do something for Swami. They want to do something which will reflect their feelings for Swami. And so the boys who were in the card department, they thought, let us do something which expresses what we want to tell Swami. And they thought long and hard and came up with a card which had a beautiful, nice figure of Nandi. And guess why Nandi?
Okay, a cutout of...
Cutout of Nandi.
Alright.
So why Nandi?
Because Nandi is the person through whom you see Lord Shiva.
Yes.
Traditionally.
Through whom you see Lord Shiva. And Nandi is always fixed on Lord Shiva.
Oh,
attention of Nandi is always fixed on the Lord. And the boys thought that is what they were doing. That is what they aspire to do. And that is what they were yearning for all this time. In Trai, in Vrindavan, they never wanted to think of anything else other than Swami. And they thought Nandi really represents what they feel for Swami. Every moment they have to be with Swami. And to make this beautiful Nandi, and they had written there, Lord, please bless us with this level of focus on you, so that we are always attuned to you. And
definitely a prayer that would have been so dear to Swami's heart. Like of all prayers, a prayer that my mind should be fixed on God.
Yes.
That would have really warmed his heart so much.
Yes. So they were ready with this card and they were hoping how will Bhagwan respond to this. Because you know, every time you make a card and you sit there in the darshan line, you are all the time praying because Swami should come. Swami should see the card. Swami should bless the card. You know, all this effort will find its fulfillment only when He blesses it. And with Swami, it's always uncertain till that final moment has arrived. And so, in the morning, they were ready with the card. Bhagwan arrived. And before he started off for darshan on the Jain side, he came to the boys. He saw the card and he was thrilled. He was really thrilled. And the boys, of course, were overjoyed. And then Swami went on for darshan. And the story did not end there. Bhagwan went for darshan. He came back after the entire round of going on the Jain side. He stood in front of this card, looked keenly at all the faces that were around this card and the expressions. And you know, it almost seemed like he was absorbing what these boys wanted to convey, though they were not saying it in so many words. It was so much evident in their faces. It was all kind of
unspoken
and represented with that one line on that card with the figure of Nandi. And then Swami most lovingly, he asked for a pen, and then he took that card and he wrote down, "With love, Baba." With love for Baba in our hearts and with that sincere feeling for him in our hearts, I think.
And that would have been a great lesson to the students also, as it is to all of us, that what God really wants most from us.
Yes.
And that is our pure love, our pure devotion and a desire to be one with Him.
And that is what always thrills the Lord.
Yes. And that is what evoked, in my view, such a response from Swami.
Yes. Even till this day, when I speak to those boys who had done the card, one of them is Mr. O.S.K. Shastri.
I see. Okay.
Yeah, the Vrindavan who taught lecturer for many years, yes, in the Vrindavan campus. And when he was sharing this anecdote with me, he was so filled with emotion even now, because he just cannot forget that moment how Bhagwan asked for the pen and he wrote, "With love, Baba."
That would have been a lifetime, a gift for a lifetime.
Absolutely. Yeah, it is still there.
Yes.
The card is still there.
No, not just the card, even the memory and that lesson.
Yes.
It is a gift for many lifetimes, in
yes.
fact.
Yes. And through those boys to entire mankind.
Yes.
And as I think about it, this Nandi episode and this whole episode of how boys used this Nandi to convey their feelings, you know, it comes to me that every aspect of Lord Shiva's personality is that way so meaningful. Everything that is associated with him, Nandi is just one of it. If you look at the form of Lord Shiva, you know, it has so many interesting, seemingly contrasting aspects, isn't it?
The form, the family of Lord Shiva.
Oh, yes.
There's a lot of paradoxes, lot of contradictions inherent And Swami used to point this out as a lesson, like in how Swami, how Lord Shiva could reconcile like so many disharmonic elements and keep them all together in peace. Like as an example, he would give several examples. And one example is this, like if we take the vehicles of the various members of Shiva's family.
Mm-hmm.
So you had Nandi, which was Lord Shiva's vehicle.
Yes.
And Goddess Parvati, Mother Parvati, she had a lion or a tiger.
Sometimes tiger is also depicted as...
Yeah, a tiger was the vehicle which she would go around on. And these two are sworn enemies. I mean, Nandi would be prey to the tiger anytime.
Yes.
So it was in as long as Nandi had Lord Shiva protecting it, there is no harm to it from...
You never see a tiger and a bull in the same place.
Yes, yes.
In the jungle.
Yes. And to continue. Yes. Then we had this Lord Shiva, he had a snake.
Yes.
Which is to be always adorning his neck.
Yes.
And at the same time, his son, Lord Subramanya.
Yes.
His vehicle was a peacock.
Yes. Oh my God.
So yet again, we had two sworn enemies of the jungle.
Yes.
Who were there living side by side in the Lord's presence. And amazing. Then to continue this further, you had Lord Ganesha, the son of Lord Shiva and Lord Parvati, Mother Parvati, and his vehicle was a small mouse.
Yes.
And again a mouse is the favorite prey for a snake. So here you see, you know, like a transcendent, I mean, you have a mouse which is prey to the snake and which is itself prey to the peacock. So this was one contradiction Swami used to very lovingly narrate about Lord Shiva.
And I think if you keep looking at the form, the other thing that comes to my mind is, Bhagwan used to say that Shiva has three eyes.
Mm.
And the Bhrumadhya eye, which is the third eye, that is the place for fire.
Mm.
And interestingly, on Lord Shiva's forehead, on his head, you have water coming down. You have Mother Ganga there.
Mm.
So you have again contrasting fire and water.
Almost side by side.
Almost side by side.
Yes.
I mean, water falling on fire, so to say. I mean, if you just look at this whole thing, to me, it appears like, you know, this whole family of Shiva, it's kind of symbolic of the way the world is. The world is full of so many contradictions, so many differences, and yet we are all one, and we are one, and there is still harmony, and it's all united because it is strung with that power of love.
Yes, in fact, if you look at the Rudram itself, the Namakam itself, you see the entire prayer consists of recognizing Lord Shiva in almost every aspect of the world.
Mm-hmm.
Like he is present in the Soma, he is also the thief, that he is anger itself, and there are like almost every element of the nature of the world that we see around us, the Namakam is a prayer recognizing Lord Shiva inherent in it.
It's basically the Vishwa Virata Swarup of Lord Shiva.
Yes.
The cosmic form which is actually there in every atom.
Yes.
In fact, that really reminds me of what Dr. Abdul Kalam writes in his autobiography, Wings of Fire.
Mm.
Therein he says that when he looked into the atom and how the neutrons and protons and electrons were inside the atom moving continuously, it was sort of a dance which is happening incessantly, non-stop.
Mm.
And he said to him, nothing occurred more appropriate than the dance of Lord Shiva.
Yes, that's a very fascinating metaphor which carries, you know,
yes.
That the dance of Lord Shiva is representative of the dance which creates, in fact, the entire universe.
Yes. Yes. In fact, this whole concept of Nataraja is another huge topic by itself. But I want to reflect on this form that you mentioned and the different facets of Lord Shiva and Lord Shiva's family. Mm. In fact, even Bhagwan, whenever he used to talk about Lord Shiva, he used to sing that beautiful bhajan, Hara Ganga Jatadhar, And in that, you know, you have all these things. Hara Ganga Jatadhara. Then you have Shiva, then Ganga Jatadhara Gauri Shankar. Girija Mane Ramana. Yeah. Mrityunjaya. Everything comes up. All that we discussed actually beautifully is conveyed in that bhajan. Why don't we listen to that?
Yes, go ahead and play it for our listeners.
Yeah, sure. So that was the energetic Ganga Jatadhara by Bhagwan himself. And Hari, as we think about this bhajan and just take this whole aspect of how Mother Ganga flows from Lord Shiva's head. In fact, I was reflecting on the story behind this, the legend behind this. And the story goes that King Sagara, who's one of the ancestors of Lord Rama, he had so many of his sons who were cursed by a sage to turn into ashes. And a wise elder suggested that the only remedy for bringing back to life these sons of King Sagara was to have Mother Ganga from the heavens come down to earth. Only with the touch of that sacred river will these lives be resurrected. And King Sagara tried very hard towards this endeavor. He was not successful, and so many of his descendants tried, again of no success. Yes. And then came King Bhagiratha, and we know the story of how Bhagiratha prayed, and he was granted this boon. But there was a catch. Mother Ganga would come down from the heavens, but they said that the flow, the velocity and the force pace, the force with which Mother Ganga would come onto earth would be so great that it would be really difficult for earth. It would really disturb the earth. And they said there has to be some kind of a stopover first, some kind of a band where Mother Ganga would land and from there would smoothly land onto earth. And that is when Lord Shiva steps in. And he takes upon himself that responsibility of having Mother Ganga fall on his head. And from Lord Shiva, then so many streams of Mother Ganga flow onto earth. And one of these streams is guided to flow onto the ashes of the ancestors of King Bhagiratha. And the moment she flows over them, they are resurrected. And that is how Mother Ganga came to earth. It was just the prayer, very sincere prayer of Bhagiratha, which found fulfillment. And through Bhagiratha, you have today millions who have benefiting and who continue to benefit with the waters of Mother Ganga. And as I was thinking about this legend, you know what came to me is Mother Ishwaramma also prayed to Bhagwan in the same manner. Because she was brought up here in Prashantinilam, and Prashantinilam we know is so arid, and it was much worse even before. In fact, they say that there are four backward districts of Andhra Pradesh, B-A-C-K, and that stands for Bellary, Anantapur, Kadapa and Karnool. These are the backward areas of Anantapur because of water scarcity. You cannot grow anything here. There is very little water and the soil is just not fit for anything productive.
And the water is brackish. It is salty.
Correct.
I stayed for 2 years in Anantapur.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember I used to fear even rinsing my mouth because of that taste. It used to be so salty. And so that's what would render many parts of this district, it would render it infertile.
Yes.
For cultivation. And it didn't help that the rains here were like so scarce and
yes,
spaced apart. So
almost a desert of an environment.
Yes.
It is hot and it is arid.
Yes.
And Mother Ishwaramma prayed to Bhagwan that can we provide some sort of relief to all these village rural folk, especially she was concerned about the ladies. And Bhagwan at that time acceded to her prayer and he built wells which could cater to the immediate needs. But that was only the first step. And as time went on, we know how Bhagwan started this huge water projects, the Anantapur water project, and then we have so many water projects. And today, if you see how this whole thing has emerged, you see, you mentioned about the sad nature of the water here. In fact, I remember seeing so many pictures of the people of this area who are affected with fluorosis.
Yes, it completely deforms their bones and their teeth fall out so early. Sometimes you see young children who don't have teeth, it's affected them so badly that they're at a very young age, like by 14 or 15, they lost all their teeth.
Yes.
And you see that their hands, legs especially, they're bent. And it's a very painful life for several years that they have to lead.
In fact, I have also seen many pictures. In fact, I had the chance to go along with the mobile hospital, which actually goes into the villages. And I saw so many cases of this dental fluorosis, skeletal fluorosis, where, you know, your bones are completely bent.
Yes.
And it is really very sad. And in 1994, during the third anniversary of the Puttaparthi Hospital, the Prime Minister of India, at that time, Mr. P.V. Narasimha Rao was here. And we know how Baba mentioned to him about this drinking water problem in these areas. And Mr. Rao, who spoke after Bhagwan, he also mentioned that, yes, he is indeed aware of the enormous hardships that people go through in this part of India. And Bhagwan then mentioned that it is high time we do something about it.
And that was because the several governments, not only the Indian government, even the British government, this was trying to tackle this problem.
Mm-hmm.
So from many, like, or we could say almost two centuries, there had been efforts to do something about the water situation in the district of Anantapur.
And nothing had happened.
Yeah, they were not successful, though they did try something.
Because there is no water source nearby.
Yes, that was a very big hindrance, definitely, that there was no good river flowing by.
And groundwater is not suitable.
It was hardly getting recharged with
no rains. I think only in the summer you had the groundwater table from which you could draw water, even though that was rich with the fluoride and all that.
Mm.
Even though it was not suitable, but even in non-summer months, in non-rainy months, you always had a water table which went down.
Yes,
very much.
The only relief, I think, was actually that there were a number of lakes in this area. But from there, they did not really have the technology wherewithal to, you know, divert it to their fields. And the water contained in them was not so much quantity that they could do such solutions.
Yes. So this 1994, we were talking about what happened in the Purnachandra Auditorium, where Mr. Rao also was there, and Bhagwan mentioned that this has to be done, but nothing happened.
Hmm.
Bhagwan mentioned that if the government takes up any project towards this end to provide water to all these areas, he would definitely assist and try and ameliorate the suffering of these people, but nothing happened.
Hmm.
This happened in 1994, and then there seemed to be no sign from the government of doing anything. There's not even it didn't seem that they even registered what Bhagwan said.
Hmm.
And that is when Swami took the challenge onto himself in March 1995. In November 1994, he was here. Four months, nothing happened. And then March 1995, Swami said he is now going to take up the charge. He is now going to provide water. And immediately he gave message to all the members of the Central Trust at that time, do all that you can in the shortest time possible to provide safe drinking water to as many people possible in these villages of Anantapur district, and the water should flow throughout the year. Don't worry about the cost.
Now, when you bring in the cost, I was just thinking that, you know, Swami proceeds in a manner in which we are not very accustomed to it.
Yes.
So Swami first declares a project.
Yes.
And then it is for the trust to see whether the funds are available. So as humans, generally the tendency would be to go to Swami and say, Swami, but where will the money come from?
Hmm.
But Swami had made a declaration. It's a very important declaration. He said, in this land, in the land of Bharat, whoever has this good intention to serve his fellow men, his fellow beings, the money required for that will automatically come to him. This was a declaration he had made in one of the discourses. And so, this was what had got demonstrated each time.
And exactly.
Not only Swami's water projects, any project that he took up, it was the intention which was first declared. The noble intention was first declared, and after that, the resources would just come in wherever it was required.
Actually, that really reminds me of what Swami Vivekananda said. A pure will, he said, is omnipotent. And that is what I think we saw with Bhagwan. He always had this pure will to do good. And he never worried about anything else after that. Things just fell into place. And I think when I reflect on it, what always comes to me is, if Bhagwan wanted, he could have just waved his hand and say, build the hospital or executed any project. But he never did it that way, because he has always wanted to teach us a lesson.
Yes.
That you too can do that, do the same. You too can have a pure will, and you will just see how doors open and how things unfold. So when Bhagwan made this declaration in March 1995, we saw how things moved so quickly, and the Anantapur water project was executed. And people started getting pure water. And the one important aspect about this water project is that Bhagwan wanted that the water should be absolutely pure in terms of there should be no fluoride content because people have suffered here long enough.
Mm. And to this end, really, it was a perennial river that he tapped. It was not a very short-term solution, which just to impress the people that there is something going on. He took a lot of pains to ensure that, as you said, A, potable water, and B, that it is a perennial source water, so that is continuously available. Though it took a lot more effort than it would have otherwise. And to this end, there were a number of filtration plants that were set up in different areas, clarifloculators to remove these salts, and a lot of these what they call as the balancing reservoirs, sumps in many places. So it was really a mammoth project.
Absolutely.
We are talking about like several hundreds of crores, around rupees 300 crores are spent on this particular project. And we are talking about two decades ago.
Yes.
I think in today's terms, that money would be like a lot more. And about 2,000 kilometers of pipeline, 700 villages. This is definitely one of the landmark projects in the world itself. One
yes.
of its kind.
I think no government has attempted of this scale.
Yes.
And in such short time.
Short time, it was like, I think it was a landmark in that sense also, beautifully executed, faultlessly executed. And as you were saying, like not only governments, had not been able to do it, not to speak of private people, individuals, anywhere. It was something that was totally not dreamt of, that something, a project like this could have been executed.
And again, what it shows is anybody can do this.
Hmm.
It is just the power of pure will.
Yes, and actually if you notice, this is almost the model for all the projects that the trust is running. And you see, like Swami never went out and appealed for funds. In fact, he was even ready to the extent to say that if funds are needed for this water project, I am ready to sell off the lands in Vrindavan or Prashantilayam.
Yes.
Whatever property I have, even if nothing remains, I'll make sure that that project happens. That was the extent of his commitment.
Yes.
But if you actually notice, like every project that of Bhagwan that he has taken up, he is channeling the good intentions of humanity.
Yes.
There's a certain, the Satya Sai Central Trust, the word trust actually is a trust in the goodness of humanity.
Wow.
That people are...
So well said.
Yes. That it's the people, literally the community is coming together to take care of the people around. The hospital is run because there are people, or Swami's devotees or otherwise, who wanted to run, who wanted to make such a thing happen. And God, Swami, has channeled this good intentions of humanity, giving each one this chance to serve his fellow brethren.
And the moment you have a noble intention and you see so many doors open, and you had so many practical examples of that in this project. I remember what the engineers and the people who were coordinating this project from the Central Trust, Mr. Ramkrishna and Mr. Kundal Rao. Mr. Ramkrishna is formerly from the L&T, the multinational company engaged in construction and many other projects. He was saying that the laying of pipes in this project had to actually follow the guidelines of taking the standard route where the road goes. They have to go along the road. That way they don't really go into the private lands and other areas. But the problem was, when you lay the pipe next to the roads, many times it was a very circuitous and it was a long route. And that definitely meant more time and more expenditure. The best way to go forward was to actually take the shortcuts, lay the pipe across the farms and the fields wherever it is possible. But for that you have to speak to all the people who own those lands. And it is generally never easy. People don't give their land for something that is not meant for their private use. And he was saying he was so surprised when he went and spoke to all these people, different parties in all these districts and all these villages. When he spoke to them about the project and about Bhagwan's pure desire for providing water, all of them came forward and gave their land. And that is how the project actually completed much, much earlier than what would have taken in the normal course of time. And it saved a lot of money because they didn't have to follow that long route.
Oh, this is a fact that was not known to me at all. I had not heard of this.
I mean, I think there are so many facts like this.
Yeah.
About this project, because I mean, this project is so huge.
Because standing in their place, I can really imagine the thrill they would have felt.
Yes.
That you know, Swami's project, that pipeline is actually going through their land.
Yes.
They must have felt that it is such an honor and
yes.
a blessing.
Yes, absolutely. And the other interesting thing is, we talked about, you said about how a lot of effort was taken to ensure that the water is purified enough. And I was looking at the statistics of this dental fluorosis and skeletal fluorosis in these areas. And this is what I noticed. In 1995, the dental fluorosis in one of these villages called Kesapuram had 115 cases. There were 115 cases of dental fluorosis in this village, which has about 1,300 people. 115 people suffer from dental fluorosis in 1995. But after the water project was implemented in 2009, there was only one case of dental fluorosis.
Oh, that's a massive...
massive reduction of this disease.
Yes.
Similarly, rheumatic arthritis. Rheumatic arthritis, which was 121 in 1995, in 2009, there are no cases of rheumatic arthritis.
Wonderful.
In the same village.
It really goes
121 cases of skeletal fluorosis. And it reduced to just two in 2009.
It really goes to show the amount of, you know, socio-economic impact really of the project that has taken up, that was taken up. And if you see merely Puttaparthi today and the surrounding areas, I'm sometimes so thrilled that to see nowadays, you know, morning when I come to the mandir, I see the sight of young children dressed in very nice, you know, neat looking school dresses and going to the schools in school buses, that really the entire economy in this area has taken off. I mean, people have a much better standard of living than it was even a few decades ago.
Yes.
And they owe it so much to Swami that he has taken up, you know, the welfare of this entire district. And as Swami, and as many people say, you know, charity begins at home.
Yes.
And he has really seen to it that not only the entire humanity, but very particularly the people of this area, and whom really no one used to pay attention to.
Yes.
So these are the people who today lead very comfortable lives. And it was because of the benevolence of Bhagwan.
In fact, I remember what Arnold Schulman from Hollywood said about this place not very long ago. In 1968, he was here and he said, Puttaparthi is a place which is about 160 kilometers from Bangalore and 10 minutes past Stone Age.
Yes. A stone's throw away from Stone Age.
Okay. I mean, that was the condition of this area, and look at what it has become today. Just this town. But I think it has provided sustenance not only this town, but this entire district of Anandpur. And actually it is beyond that. We'll talk about that. And in fact, as you are mentioning this, how this place has transformed, I was reminded of November 18th, when the scene was again the Purnachandra Auditorium, and the same Prime Minister, P.V. Narasimha Rao, he came to now inaugurate this project. Swami had told him just a few months ago to see if he can do something. The government did not do anything. Swami went ahead, he completed, and he called him for inauguration. And interestingly, and he said that this is something unbelievable. I have never achieved. The government has never achieved anything like this. I don't know. I also belong to Andhra Pradesh, and I always wanted to do something. But it is really thrilling for him that such a thing could be executed. And in fact, I remember him saying, after he pressed the button and the pumps in the water treatment plant in the summer storage tank in Anandpur started and water began to flow, he said, this land is no more Anandpur, it is Anandpur.
In fact, there is one more sentiment that was conveyed, that the land which was earlier, it's called Rayal Seema, but at that time it was more like Ralda Seema. The entire place was just rocky.
Ralda means stones and rocks.
The word Ralu in Telugu means rocks, and the entire land used to be Ralda Seema. Just merely anywhere you turn, all you'll see is just rocks and rocks and rocks. And today it is Ratnala Seema. They say that literally diamonds grow in this place. So much prosperity it has seen.
Fantastic. But the most important thing is what happened after this.
Hmm.
The water project was completely executed, and Bhagwan ensured the smooth functioning of this project. The members of the trust saw to it that every aspect of it was implemented. And just about after 1 year or 1.5 years, Swami called a meeting of the senior members of the cabinet of the government of Andhra Pradesh. The chief minister of Andhra Pradesh at that time, Mr. Chandrababu Naidu, also was here in Prashanthi Nilayam, and this happened in October 1997, when Bhagwan just gave away this project to the government. Though so much he had done for this project, I remember that month, that period when this project was going on, even though it was summer months, April, May, because that's when the project actually started. It started in April, May 1995. And Bhagwan that year, he did not go anywhere. Generally in summer months, he would go to Vrindavan or he would go to Kodaikanal. That year he did not go anywhere. He was in Prashanthi Nilayam, in the heat in Prashanthi Nilayam. And there were occasions when he went on helicopter to oversee the work. And every week he would want Mr. Kondalrao and Mr. Ramakrishna to come to Prashanthi Nilayam and to report to him what is happening. Physically, he would want to be apprised of everything happening, though he's the one who's executing the work in different dimensions. But physically, he was here. How much of involvement Bhagwan showed in this project is something phenomenal. So after having physically also put so much effort, he just gave away to the people. And that day, what he said is so profound. He said, "I am always ready to help and serve you. You may belong to any village, any district, for that matter, any state, any region. I do not have any feelings of difference. Whether it is religious, whether it is regional, whether it is national, everyone is same to me, and I am just willing to help anyone who is in need." And today, if you see, just like that one stream of Ganga from Lord Shiva's head flowed and it resurrected the lives of the ancestors of the Raghu clan, and here you see so many lives every day resurrected, corrected and sustained because of this flow of Ganga. In fact, for many, it is not any way different from Ganga. The Ganga is supposed to be, is hailed as one of the pure rivers, because where it starts, it actually is very pure. In the sense, they say that scientifically also it is proven that the Ganga has 25% more oxygen than any other river. It's because probably of the, because of the herbs and so many things that get mixed into it. We do not know the reason. But that is how pure it is when it starts. Later, of course, it gets polluted thanks to man's pollution. But in the initial phase of the river, it is very pure, and it's intrinsically it is very pure.
Medicinal.
And it provides sustenance in 11 states to 40% of India's population. And if you see, I mean, the scale of this water project is something like this, providing over 1 million people.
In fact, the government of India, it has recognized this project in two distinct ways. And the first one was when in the 9th fire plan document, which is a document for the entire country, the planning commission, it noted that Sri Sathya Sai Central Trust has set an unparalleled example of private initiative in implementing a project on their own without any state's budgetary support. And it goes on to say, you know, massive water supply project, the amount that was spent, and that 731 fluoride and salinity affected villages. So, and in a very short span of 18 months. So the planning commission really noted this as a benchmark among projects that is executed in the country. And later in 1999, the Department of Post, they released a special stamp.
Yes, I have seen that stamp.
Commemorating this water project. It was released on Bhagwan's birthday, 23rd November 99. So this was a very, you know, a very unique way of really showing their gratitude to Bhagwan.
Commending this work. In fact, that's why whenever, you know, a Shiva bhajan is sung, and we adore Lord Shiva as Ganga, and we talk about Bhagwan and Ganga, and you know, what comes to my mind is these faces of all these people who have benefited. It is how Ganga is flowing today, because of their... In that instance, according to the legend, Lord Shiva stepped in, and here you had Bhagwan. When governments didn't do anything, nobody came forward to support these people. Here Bhagwan stepped in, and today Ganga flows, saving so many lives. In fact, let us listen to one of those bhajans now, Hari.
Har har Gange, har har Gange. Har Har Gange, Har Har Gange,
Har Har Gange, Har Har Gange.
He Nataraja, He Shiva Raja, Har 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 Gange. He Nataraja, He Shiva Raja, Har 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 Gange. He Nataraja, He Shiva Raja, Har 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 Gange.
He Nataraja, He Shiva Raja.
Har Har Gange, Har Har Gange,
Har Har Gange, Har Har Gange.
Ati Purishvara Jaya Ganga Dhara,
Ati Purishvara Jaya Ganga Dhara,
Ati Purishvara Jaya Ganga.
Shankara,
Shiva Shankara, Shiva Shankara, Shankara Sai.
Shankara, Shiva Shankara, Shiva Shankara, Shankara Sai.
Shiva Shankara, Shiva Shankara, Shankara Sai.
Shankara, Shiva Shankara, Shiva Shankara, Shankara Sai.
Har Har Gange, Har Har Gange.
Har Har Gange, Har Har Gange.
He Nataraja, He Shiva Raja, Har 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 Gange.
He Nataraja, He Shiva Raja,
Har Har Gange.
Shankara,
Shiva Shankara, Shiva Shankara, Shankara Sai.
Shankara, Shiva Shankara, Shiva Shankara, Shankara Sai.
Shiva Shankara, Shiva Shankara, Shankara Sai. Har Har Gange, Har Har Gange.
Oh, that's a very refreshing bhajan, isn't it?
Yeah. I think the voice is so vibrant.
Yes.
Yeah.
And a good break for us also. So talking about this water projects and Ganga, we talked about the Anandpur water project, and as I was telling, no, that was only just one stream, and then we saw how Swami extended that to the districts of Medak and Mehboob Nagar, and those areas also had the same fluoride problem and low ground water, and so you had in three states, in three districts in Andhra Pradesh benefiting from this. And just had Swami had mentioned in that 1997 declaration, where I do not have any feelings of difference between any state or region or language. You saw Bhagwan suddenly making that announcement in 2002 in the health meet, in the first anniversary of the Bangalore hospital, Bangalore Super Speciality Hospital. Out of the blue, he announced about the Chennai Water Project.
19 January.
19 January.
Which was incidentally the anniversary of Sundaram, which was Swami's residence in Chennai.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
That was a connection.
Okay. I didn't think about that, but yeah, that's a really interesting connection. I mean, and that was actually something which, again, pleasantly shocked everyone, because no one was expecting that, actually. It was a hospital anniversary, and Swami was talking, everybody, the health minister of India was there, and all the talk was about health, and suddenly, out of nowhere, as it seemed, Bhagwan makes his declaration about the people of Chennai, and he goes on to say that how people of Chennai have been suffering for centuries for water, for potable water. And in fact, the story goes back how in 1880, when there was only 500,000 people in Chennai, even then, you know, a dam was built on the Arni River, which is a small river, but it never helped the city. Only in rainy season did they get some water, and they always had this problem of buying water from the tankers. And in fact, I've seen videos of how these people, and especially children, saying they're not able to study. People saying they have to get up 2 a.m. in the morning to collect water, because, you know, water comes in tankers and each person gets a one bucket or two buckets, and you have to fight for that water. I don't know how the city managed all these years.
In fact, in the 90s, I was a student. I was studying in Chennai.
Yes, you did in Chennai.
Yeah, I was doing my engineering there. And I remember that the summer months weren't months we used to look forward to. Because we never knew when the water would run out. And it used to be a lot of difficulty.
So water never came in taps?
No, only, you know, we would completely depend on the tankers. And if the tankers didn't turn up, and that would be a terrible day. Sometimes the classes also would be called off.
Yeah, I mean, without water, how can you manage?
Very, very inconvenient. And I think the problem at that time was just reaching the critical stage. This was, I'm talking about 2000 or so.
Yes.
When I was just passing out, I remember the city of Chennai was really at that critical stage where it was not receiving enough water.
Yeah. And no one prayed to Bhagwan. Swami, on his own, just went forward, almost as if feeling the pain of the people of the city. No one ever told him.
Yeah, it took everyone completely by surprise.
And the interesting thing is, everyone knows about the water problem. The governments have been approached. And in fact, in 1963, the parliament had made a decision that a water sharing agreement has to be made, and it was done, and they decided that a canal has to be built from Andhra Pradesh to Chennai to bring water. But sadly, even though the declaration happened in 1963, until 1996, the canal had not happened.
Between the two governments of Andhra Pradesh and Tamil Nadu, between them they spent about 1,000 crores. On trying to build this canal between the reservoir and the feeder reservoir for Chennai.
And shockingly, even after the canal was built in 1996, the amount of water which is supposed to reach Chennai is 12 TMC.
That is the requirement of the city, 12 TMC.
Yes.
1,000 million cubic feet of water.
That is what was stipulated, what will reach Chennai. And in that same year, in 1996, it was shocking for me to find that only 0.076 TMC reached Chennai. That's the first year of the execution of that project.
Yes, and that is no surprise, because when the trust actually decided to take up this project, it was discovered that all that was built was like a ditch. And after some of the erosion and with rains and all, the ditch had almost collapsed on itself. So there was very little, it's a miracle that even that much reached Chennai.
God. I mean, I have seen those pictures of how it was just, as you mentioned, a just long leaky ditch. And when Bhagwan finally made this announcement and water started flowing, I think the whole city was so overjoyed. In 2004, you had this huge group of devotees who came to Prashantinilayam and to offer their gratitude to Bhagwan. And they wanted actually a big formal occasion, a big function for Bhagwan to declare this open. I mean, it was something that the Central Trust could go to town with.
Yes, because the solution that was provided, it was a very, permanent, almost a permanent solution. So that canal which it was widened to begin with, and then it was lined with concrete. Can you imagine?
Yes.
The amount of effort and the cost involved in lining that several kilometers of it with concrete. And not only that, there are long, very long stretches of the canal where an imported thing called a geomembrane. So that was laid, and
it's a waterproof membrane.
Yes, because one thing is, of course, there is unavoidable loss due to evaporation because it is an open stretch of canal.
Yes,
but on the there is also the chance that the water will seep through through that concrete. So to avoid such losses, in very long stretches they have put even geomembranes. So there's a lot of care that Swami has taken. It's a quality solution.
Yes.
Yet again, like just as we saw with the Anantapur and the other water projects, and of course the hospitals and the universities, this is a very typical example of how Swami takes very great care in ensuring that the solution he provided was a permanent one, one of great quality.
And the interesting thing is, Swami didn't want to make a song and dance out of it.
There is absolutely no function. I don't remember an announcement when a lot of fanfare that water started flowing. I think it very quietly happened.
It very quietly happened. And even when the people came, they sang some songs, and a couple of the state president and the convener of the central state trust of this organization of Tamil Nadu, they spoke a few words. But there was no big public function to announce to the world that this has happened. Swami didn't want a function. Actually, that function, I remember, it was only because so many people had gathered, I mean, the whole Kulwant Hall was full, that Swami allowed them to express whatever they wanted to say.
Because if standing in Swami's place, it was more like, as a mother, he's providing for his children.
Yes.
So where is the necessity to go out to the world to announce and to make publicity or fanfare about it? And that is the only reason, maybe, that I can see why such a thing
And the
happened.
Same thing happened later. Even when Bhagwan after that went forward and suddenly announced that he would provide waters to the districts of East and West Godavari in Andhra Pradesh. I mean, there's so many streams. When I look at that, we say from 7 streams flowed from Lord Shiva's side, and here it is innumerable. I mean, one after another, Swami continuously was taking up new projects, and everything was unexpected. And this was also again so unexpected. He had gone to hospital to see the doctors and speak to the staff. I think this was sometime in 2004. And suddenly out of the blue, he just mentioned that the people in East and West Godavari are suffering, even though the Godavari River is nearby, but these people, especially in the East Godavari district, when all these tribals...
They were tribal habitations.
Yes, tribal habitations.
Literally the poorest of the poor, and
absolutely.
In one sense, people had completely forsaken them.
Absolutely. In fact, that reminds me of my visit to that place.
You visited East Godavari?
Yes, I visited East Godavari.
Oh, you're so fortunate to see the people whom God has directly touched.
I have actually seen hunters here, I interacted with these people who go around with bows and arrows. I mean, they are so cut off from everything that we think are part of this civilization. Okay. And they are still dealing with bow and arrows, trying to hunt animals. They are at that level of living. That standard of living.
It's really something which is incredible that Swami, I wouldn't say like at a physical level, actually took notice of them. Because I'm very sure that no government, even the local NGOs, the very last people they would think of is people in such areas, tribal habitations.
And They had no water because they used to live on all these mountain tops, and they used to depend on some streams and very polluted water. Perhaps the immunity in them is so high that, they survive with all that water because they were really drinking very polluted water. I saw them, from some ponds and some tiny streams here and there, because the river is there, but the river is pretty far, and you have to go down so much to collect water from that river. You can't do it. And once Bhagwan provided water, you know, first of all, it was very surprising for them because someone comes suddenly and is trying to help. They were initially suspicious because they are always afraid that someone is come to take away their living or take away their land.
Yeah,
because that is they are so dear. I mean, that land is so dear to them. You know, they are more patriotic than anyone else in that sense. But once Bhagwan they realized that here is someone who is really willing to help them, they were so moved because no one ever cared for them. As you mentioned, no one ever had bothered about them.
I can't believe that, you know, anybody can even spare a thought for them. They're
yes.
really on the periphery of civilization.
Yes.
We really don't even spare a thought for them.
And look at this, their love for Bhagwan. Once they knew that Bhagwan is providing them water, there was this lady, I remember, in East Godavari, who just gave away her land, about 1 acre of land, for the
filtration plant.
She, till then, she has not even seen Bhagwan. Even that day, she had not seen Bhagwan. But out of their gratitude to Swami, they just gave away. And
beautiful sentiment, really.
Beautiful. And in fact, when I went there, you know, it was so heartening to see these people and their love for Bhagwan, the way they are singing. They have composed so many songs on Bhagwan, and in their own tribal language, which is a dialect of Telugu, they were singing songs in praise of him, and they were waiting for the day when they will see Bhagwan. Of course, they did come to Prashantanilayam later in 2009, and they had beautiful performances in front of Bhagwan.
Tell me, Bisho, that you have a track of those songs.
I have one. In fact, you should listen to this. This tribals singing in joy about their love for Bhagwan. Wasn't that sweet?
That was really sweet. That was the word that was coming to my mind.
Yes.
Really, thank you, Vishu, for playing that song.
In fact, we have quite a couple of recordings of not only this, but many more songs. But now we are running out of time. So probably we'll hear to that some other time. But when you reflect on all these, you know, again in the East-West Godavari project, I don't know how many people know about the East-West Godavari project. Because never an announcement has made in Cyclonthal about this.
Yeah, this one went off pretty quietly.
Nobody ever knew that the project started and the project got over. When the project was completed, it was mentioned to Bhagwan if Bhagwan would come to East West Godavari and if they could have a function. Swami said, you just have bhajans and distribute prasadam and start the work. Let water start flowing.
And that was it. The intention was delivered and
yes,
God was satisfied that his devotees were happy.
Happy. So like this, you know, when you think about Shiva and the Ganga flowing from Lord Shiva's head, here you see Bhagwan stepping in again and again, taking that role of Shiva, and so many streams of Ganga flowing to sustain millions of lives. In fact, if you take the number of people who have been benefited in all these projects, and not to count of so many other streams of service projects on the waterfront taken up by the Satyasaya organization, not directly by the central trust, but by the Satyasaya organization. I know a huge project taken up by the Sai Youth of Andhra Pradesh, similarly the Sai youth of Mumbai, they've all taken inspiration from this. And if you see, there's so many innumerable Gangas now flowing.
Yes, in fact, if you look at the individual samitis, the Sai, Sathya Sai centers, I'm sure, like, I was part of a Sathya Sai center, and every summer we would definitely set up like a water camp. So near a, let's say a bus stand up, you know, where people can actually come and take water. So definitely even at that level, this is the, you know, an inspiration from Bhagwan, and that is the inspiration that we were following, that each one of us used to take on the service of providing water to the thirsty.
And I believe the Central Trust even now has taken up a new project.
Yes, so this is an extension of the water project that took place in Anantapur, and this is a project that was recently announced, and this is an 80 crore project which will now cover 118 villages. So that will bring, so the total number of villages that are covered under the water project would now be close to 900 in Anantapur.
Anantapur
district. So in about 3 mandals of Anantapur district, the work has already begun, and already, you know, one of the sums will be located very close to Puttaparthi. It's in the Kottacheruvu village, about 15 kilometers from here.
So the entire, almost the entire district of Anantapur now will be taken care of.
Yes, almost the entire district will be covered under the water project, Anantapur drinking water project.
Fantastic. In fact, as we talk about Shiva and Swami and this whole concept of Swami providing water and sustenance to so many lives, you know, I am just reminded of my trip some months ago to Kashi. Kashi is where, you know, you have the Ganga flowing. It's one of those areas towards the later part of the journey of Mother Ganga.
Banaras.
Banaras. Yeah. Banaras. Another name of Kashi. Banaras. Known for the famous Vishwanath temple. Mm. The other spectacle in Banaras is the Ganga Aarti.
Mm-hmm.
Ganga Aarti is a very elaborate ceremony where you have adoration to this river done in a very systematic, ritualistic and
ceremonially fashion.
Yes, and there's a beautiful song going on, and this elaborate aarti goes on for almost 45 minutes to 1 hour, wherein with a lot of reverence they worship the river. You know, you feel so happy, you know, that you know, people have that deep connection with nature. You revere nature for all that the river does. But the most heartening thing, which really actually pleasantly shocked me and surprised me, is on the altar when they do the aarti, they have the picture of one or two Gurujis. I think, I don't know what those pictures are, but in the center they have the picture of, guess who? Bhagwan. Swami.
Oh, that is so appropriate, because he's the origin of...
He's the origin. I was so surprised, because I saw this, here is this Ganga Aarti happening, and they're doing this elaborate aarti, and to whom are they doing? They're doing to Swami. There's a beautiful picture of Bhagwan. And in that same, you know, we discussed in the first satsang, in that Shiva pose, because Swami in that mudra pose, you know, he's just still in that mudra pose. Is so much like Shiva, that ascetic kind of form of Bhagwan.
So every day this ceremonial aarti takes place to Bhagwan in the Ganga itself,
in
the holy
Ganga.
Ganga.
In the Ganga, in the ancient and the holiest city of India. I mean, it is revered, it's considered as the oldest city, and it is considered as the holiest city because it dates back to...
This is really so thrilling, Bishop. That's...
And I'll tell you what, on the top of this, towards the end of the aarti, they have this jaikar. So they have Jai Bolo Ganga Maya Ki Jai and all that. And after that, they have Jai Bolo Parabrahma Swaroop Bhagwan Shri Sathya Sai Baba Ki Jai. It ends like that, you know. I was like so thrilled that there is this worship of Bhagwan in this land. When they worship Mother Ganga, they know that it is coming from him. And I can never ever forget that image, and I really want to go back to that scene. If there is one place I want to visit again, it is Banaras, and be present at the Ganga Aarti.
Take me with you, Vishu.
Sure. Let's do it together. So, Hari, I think it is time to wind up. It's already 10:10. And we just covered only one aspect of Lord Shiva, just the Ganga flowing from Lord Shiva's head. And I think if you look at like this, if you reflect like this, there are so many beautiful aspects of Lord Shiva's family, of Lord Shiva's personality. You look at, once we talked about Ganesha, and I think in the similar manner, if you take how Lord Shiva resurrected the life of Markandeya, there are so many stories, and every time you look at Lord Shiva's life and you look at Bhagwan's life and the declaration that he made in 1963, that I am Shiva Sai Avatar, I am Shiva Shakti Avatar, all these parallels keep coming in, and it's so fulfilling to reflect that we are so fortunate to have actually been contemporaries of this avatar.
It's really wonderful, and during this 1 hour, my mind dwelt so much on the love of God. And in that sense, it was so fortunate to be part of this program. And I'm sure even the listeners will be very grateful for this great opportunity to have their mind dwell on Swami's love, which is one of the purest, one of its kind.
Yes.
And it is always available to us, and at any time that we want to call upon Him.
And I hope, Hari, we can continue this discussion, because there is still so much more we can discuss on this topic.
Yes, Bishu, it really does. It's something that warms my heart so much, and I'm ready to do this anytime with you.
Wow, wonderful. Thank you so much, Hari. And dear listeners, it is time now to draw the curtains on this last leg of Thursday live broadcast, coming to you from the studios of Radio Sai. I'm Team Radio Sai's Bishu, and thank you so much for listening to this episode of Outside, Inside and Deep Inside. If you have any queries or comments or suggestions about what you would like to hear from us or discuss on this program, please do write to listener@radiosai.org. listener@radiosai.org. Thank you so much for listening. And before I sign off, let me tell you, at 10:15, you will hear a musical presentation, Yuga Yuga K Avatar. It's presented by the Sai devotees of California during Krishna Janmashtami 2007. So you will begin to listen to this in a few minutes from now. Thank you so much for being with us. And as I sign off, a sweet goodbye and loving Sai Ram from Prashant Nilayam. Keep listening and keep writing to us. Sai Ram.